Fantasy Freaks and Geeks. What's up? No, this is not James Coe. It is Alex Gelhar, the whiz kid from Wisconsin on the mic. James got called up to the big leagues to do NFL Fantasy Live on the network today. So I am filling in the host chair. And I am joined, as always, by the Fantasy Maverick, Adam Rank. How are you doing this morning?
What's going on? I'm excited.
Yeah?
I think when – and I don't want to call you the backup quarterback, but not enough to keep me from calling you the backup quarterback. This is good. This is like the Mitchell Trubisky of the Fantasy Live podcast. It's just a matter of time.
I just started a little earlier than expected.
Before you were going to take over, but now it's – I guess I should have gone to Sean Watson.
Yeah.
That would have been more apt.
That would have been fitting.
I'm happy to have you.
Isn't he technically the third string quarterback? Because in other instances where James has been gone, Marcus has hosted.
Is that right?
That's true.
So you're like Joe Webb.
I'm the Joe Webb. I'm starting a playoff game for us.
But you do great work on special teams,
weirdly. Thank you. The voice you just heard was, of course, the wide receiver prognosticator, Matt Harmon. How are you doing this morning, pal?
Fine.
It was a rough day yesterday. We'll get into that for you and some of your players. And then, of course, to my right, the magical beard of fantasy, Matt Franchise. What's up?
Another day, another podcast, you know. Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm excited. We have so much football to talk about.
Yes, and in the words of James Coe, this is, of course, a huge show we have before us.
Huge!
We've got all the news to catch you up on, injuries to some star players, breakout performances from some other players. We'll hit the waiver wire, who you need to be targeting, how much you should be spending on them from your free agent acquisition budget if you play that way, which you should be because it's the right way to play the game.
The FAB.
FAB? F-A-A-B.
I don't care for it.
It's got to have – the A's got to have one of those lines over it.
Yes.
I like a cast-based system that, you know, you are rewarded by how terrible you are.
I hate that rule.
I am very traditional in people should be slotted into economic slots.
Very anti-waiver
wire. I think priority.
It
should be on your draft position, and then it carries through. Like, in my league of record, I have the 10th overall pick in a 10-man league, so I have the number one waiver priority. That doesn't go away until I use it.
Right.
But so see, now you have a choice. Like, well, do I burn it this week on Tarik Cohen?
I've been in leagues where people just sit on that till like week 11.
But what's the point?
Because you're waiting for that guy to drop.
I guess.
Also in the show, we'll recap the target and touch leaders. Franchise and Harmon combine on a phenomenal piece. Seriously, I'm not just saying that to be a company man. It's good stuff. You can read it at NFL.com/touches and targets. We'll get into that. We're also going to go behind the glass to producer Chris, who also works for the Chargers, for Chris's Charger Corner working title.
I like it already.
See. But he's close to the team, so he's going to hopefully give us some insights for Monday Night Football and upcoming matchups, and we'll see how accurate they are, and then maybe the segment will die after one instance or not. Frank, we need to keep the drama.
Incentive.
At some point, I would like to know if the Chargers and I can ever be friends again. We have a war going on. We don't like each
other. You were a former season ticket holder.
I know. And they've turned their back on me. It's like, oh, okay, you're moving to Orange County, and the most prominent sports person in Orange County, outside of Mike Trout,
wow,
is me.
Sick name drop.
Is me, and the Chargers turned their back on me. I'm from the 951. I live in – that's your wheelhouse. That's exactly the market you should be targeting.
Area man takes up a battle against local sports teams to be Adam Rank's, like,
I was going to say, I feel like this is – how many – like,
he has a lot of
issues
vendettas.
Do you have with sports teams?
A lot. I have a lot of issues with a lot of people.
And then to wrap up the episode, we'll, of course, get to your top performers, biggest disappointments, and daily daps. But, as always, we start the show with your top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife.
So, David Johnson, number one pick in many, many, many fantasy leagues, hurt his wrist on Sunday against the Lions. X-rays came back negative, but the fear is he could miss a few weeks at a minimum. Half the season or more is even on the table. The team doctors and staff are going to get us more information today, hopefully. But, Franchise, what do we do in the wake of this David Johnson injury?
This was terrible to watch. David Johnson was doing everything, first of all, for the Cardinals, no surprise. I think it was like he caught a pass like between three defenders and got smashed by him, and I think that's when he hurt himself. He came back on the field for one more play, I think, and then was out. And I believe Ian Rappaport said last night that x-rays were negative, but they were awaiting some MRI results today. So it's like pretty severe wrist sprain. Now Rap Sheet just tweeted that he might not miss time. It's something to keep an eye on. It sucks for anyone who drafted him in the first round. I mean, wrist is important for a running back. Got to be able to hold on to the ball.
Yep.
And he catches a lot of passes, so that could affect his pass-catching ability. Just something we got to keep an eye on and see how this plays out.
If we want to be encouraged, last year in Week 17, he looked like to have suffered what should have been a catastrophic knee injury, but he bounced right back up, and it wasn't serious damage. So, yeah. Harmon, who's the guy we're going to dial up on the waiver wire in the absence of Johnson if he does miss time?
I guess it would be Kerwin Williams, who also has a nice revenge game on his slate this week against the Colts. But this offense, I watched this game pretty closely on Sunday, the Lions and Cardinals, and I'm worried about the Cardinals just in general. And I know you just mentioned the fact he, you know, looked like he had suffered a serious injury in Week 17, and that might be, you know, good for maybe his recovery ability off this one. I don't know, man. I'm a little nervous about the fact the last two times we've seen David Johnson, he's left the game with potentially multi-week injuries. That's what tends to happen to these running backs that get pummeled with workload, yeah, as he certainly did last year. I don't know, man. If he's out, I don't know that I'm chasing any of these running backs, even though I kind of like Kerwin Williams, because, like I mentioned, Carson Palmer was just – it was a nightmarish scenario yesterday, because just any time he was forced to throw off platform, he was not good. He threw interceptions. On passes that traveled 20 more yards in the air, he was 0 for 5 yesterday.
Yeesh.
It's a rough going, and maybe it's just a slow start, but you know, you got to be concerned about the whole Cardinals offense.
It could be, and Adam Rankin, we go to you as a resident West Coaster here, but there is some data to back up the fact that West Coast quarterbacks that have to travel to the East Coast. I mean, Detroit's not exactly the quote unquote East Coast, but they have to travel far east for the early games. Sometimes they struggle. Big Ben has had issues with it when he travels the other direction. But Carson Palmer, do you think this is worrisome, or just maybe some Week 1 rust and a long travel?
It's worrisome because it's something that we saw last year, that this team wasn't really clicking. At least Carson Palmer wasn't for a long time. And again, I still, as a West Coast person, I always hate that they make the West Coast teams play in that 10 a.m. slot. Like, why? Like, you have plenty of – like, there were 3 1 o'clock games last night, and you're like, why can't we have more? Like,
can't we get more
NFL? Can we have more afternoon games? Like, do people not like these? I don't know what the big deal is, especially if you're a West Coast team. And I remember as a little kid waking up, and because my dad was a Bears fan, obviously, and you'd want to see the – I remember how upset he would be when the Rams were in one of those 10 a.m. slots and they would preempt them, because in the 80s the Bears were on on the CBS or NBC, CBSN back then, you know, fairly regularly. So the one thing, though, with Carson Palmer and this whole Cardinals offense is that even with David Johnson being there and being so great, at some point you're like, and you saw this last year, like, do they need to go through a remodel? Do they need to do a rebuild? Do they need to kind of get a new approach? Because Larry Fitzgerald is coming towards the end of his career. I still think he's got a little bit. He seems like he's got a lot left. But Carson Palmer has been scaring me, and it's surprising to me that they didn't try to address it in the draft. Perhaps they were trying to maneuver up to get somebody like Mahomes or somebody like that. But, man, they really could be in a very precarious position, because the drop-off from Palmer to Stanton, I think, is pretty severe.
Yeah, they should trade for Brett Hundley or something.
They should do something. And not to mention, like, I think Palmer could be functional or potentially even like a plus starter if – all things were fine in the Cardinals offense, but all things are not fine. Like, their left tackle DJ Humphreys had to leave with an injury in this game. Their receiver core has multi-layers of questions, even though John Brown encouragingly did play a pretty full workload.
Yes, that was like 90% of the snaps?
He was right behind Fitzgerald, I think just over 80%.
Yeah,
so
that's great to
see. He was the number two receiver, so that's great to see. But, yeah, things are not all right with the Cardinals right now.
Moving on to Duval County, they had a great win against the Texans on the road, but it came at a cost. After just a handful of snaps, Allen Robinson is done for the season with a torn ACL, the team has confirmed. The Doug Marrone fever dream of never passing nearly came true in Week 1, though. So, Harmon, as the resident Allen Robinson truther and fan club leader and pal, what's the fallout for this passing attack and Leonard Fournette as an ancillary effect? Because he saw the highest percentage of runs with 8-plus defenders in the box already per next-gen stats. I'll throw it to you.
I mean, this is hard.
Do you need a moment? Should we go to rank instead?
No. We're fine. I mean, this is a really just a horrible thing for Allen Robinson to have to deal with. I mean, he's in a contract year. It was looking like he could at least bounce back to somewhere in the median between his 2015 and 2016 season. I know he had been really diligent this offseason and really getting after it and everything. So it's a horrible, disappointing development for his career, and just, you know, wish him the best personally and professionally and everything that's going to happen next, and confident we'll see him dominating again here soon. As for the Jacksonville offense, I know that I've already gotten questions about it, and I'll probably have to address it in the deep dive waiver wire column. Who are we chasing in this passing attack now? And I think my answer is like a pretty hard nobody. I mean, I'll recommend that if you're in a deep league that starts multiple receivers, that you can add Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee, who both led the team in targets, tied for the team lead in targets with four. Both of them four. Marquise Lee, no catches on those four targets. And I think this is the formula that Jacksonville wanted. And I know that you and I, Alex, were discussing about it last night. Like, who are the Mirage teams from week one? And I think Jacksonville's certainly on the ledger there. But here's the but. They stopped Houston. I mean, this defense was unbelievable with the pass rush that they got out.
Calais Campbell signing.
Oh,
he's a phenomenal player, and he crushed for Arizona, but seeing him alongside the rest of the people they have on that defensive line was a total difference maker.
Yannick Ngakoue getting after it. Dante Fowler even looking functional, and that really sets up Leonard Fournette to be like a 300-plus carry back potentially.
This goes back to like early Russell Wilson era Seahawks. Like, dominant defense, run the ball a ton, and have hopefully Blake doesn't turn the ball
over. Which is like what they've been trying to be for like 5 years.
Yeah, Gus Bradley leaves, and then the first year that he's gone, they get the team he wanted.
Yeah, wanted perfect.
But honestly, if you look at their schedule, I see them, their bye weeks in week eight, they could legitimately be 5-2.
The
schedule is breaking out pretty well for them. I think their toughest game is at Pittsburgh, which I don't think that I wouldn't automatically give that to the Steelers. And I think, listen, I'm not automatically giving nothing to the Steelers.
I hear you.
They're gonna get into more games that they're gonna end up winning, like 12-10.
The Steelers?
No,
the
Jags.
The Jags. No, I get that. But thinking about a team like Pittsburgh, if they can go out and put up points, see, I don't think Jacksonville can even be competitive if they have to try to get into a shootout right
but
now.
We're
getting a little ahead of ourselves here, guys.
I don't think Pittsburgh necessarily goes out and does that against them.
That's fair.
Franchise, are you after Leonard Fournette's dominant performance but losing Allen Robinson? Are you worried at all, or are you still fine with him?
I mean, he had 29 touches in this game. That was the most of any running back this week so far. If they're going to give it, they have already come out and said they don't want Blake Bortles throwing the ball. I think he completed
21.
11 passes out of 21
attempts,
and they just fed Fournette, and most of his runs were up the middle for short gains. He punched in a short touchdown. I mean, Chris Ivory got 10 or 11 touches too. TJ Yeldon was inactive, so maybe Fournette comes off the field in third downs going forward.
He caught a few passes though, so that's encouraging.
Yeah. If he's going to get this kind of volume, like all day, he's going to be a weekly RB1 just because of the volume.
Yep.
All right, moving on. Somebody who's not a weekly RB1 but is going to be on a lot of starting fantasy rosters coming up, Tarik Cohen.
Woo.
Put on a show in Chicago. He's the real deal. Does this make anybody nervous about Joho? Franchise is the resident running back guru. We'll go back to you. What's the ding for Jordan Howard, and how do we value Cohen moving forward?
So Jordan Howard still got 16 touches in this game. It was a negative game script for Chicago. I think, you know, Howard got the goal line touchdown, but Tarik Cohen came out of nowhere. 12 targets, 8 receptions. He averaged like 13.2 yards per carry. He had 66 rushing yards on his five carries. He scored a receiving touchdown of his own. The Jordan Howard touchdown was a direct snap from the Wildcat to Tarik Cohen. He handed off to Jordan Howard. What'd I say?
Wild Bear.
That's what they're calling it in Chicago.
I think this is a guy who, yes, I'm worried about Jordan Howard's volume in negative game scripts like this. They also lost Kevin White to potential season-ending collarbone injury.
I think he's already on IR.
He's already on IR. I think Tarik Cohen's value skyrockets with an injury like that. We saw them use him all over the field with success. I think when he's on the field, defenses are not going to be able to just ignore this guy. People knocked his size. You know, he's only like 179 pounds, but he clearly showed his versatility, and it's definitely worrisome for people who took Jordan Howard in the first round, which we were kind of advising against.
To me, he looks at least like a safe weekly floor play rank, right? Getting in the mix on running and passing downs.
Cohen?
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. And you know, it's funny because some kid hit me up, you know, hey, who do I pick up on the waiver wire? And Mike Clay and I, Mike Clay of ESPN, we had a difference of opinion because he was all about Golladay, and I said Cohen. And I think that both Howard and Cohen are going to be able to coexist. I think it's going to work out fine. I think it's I know a lot of people will probably compare it to LaDainian Tomlinson and Darren Sproles because Cohen compares favorably to Darren Sproles, but you got to realize that those teams were different. I mean, those Chargers teams had Antonio Gates, and LaDainian Tomlinson was a much better receiver than Jordan Howard is at this point of his career. So I think both of them, in a team that is right now starved for offensive players, there is no way that you're going to not use Jordan Howard, and you're going to find a way to put Cohen into the mix. And we saw there were times, too, at the end of the game where you would think that Cohen should be on the field, that he was on the sideline.
Yes.
And they were kind of like, you know, you wonder, but you're like, you know what? They're not going to overuse him in week one, which is pretty much the opposite of what the Jags were doing with Fournette. Like, he might not be here week A, but whatever, we're running him 40 times. I think that it's pretty safe. And I talked about this at the top of the show about having that number one waiver spot that I lose for the rest of the season. And a couple of years ago, I didn't jump in on Freddie Morris. And it ended up because Washington running back, like, it ended up costing me the whole year. And so instead of holding out, hoping that somebody's going to break free in week eight or week nine, it's like, and I just lost Danny Woodhead. I'm going to pick up Cohen, and I'm going to feel pretty comfortable with him. And I think that the touchdown, you know, that it's going to be a variance that comes and goes. But I think week to week, like you said, that floor is going to be pretty good, and he's going to be heavily involved. And I think Howard is not going to suffer as much as a lot of people.
Benefit for those two as well is the Bears' defense is pretty good, so it's going to be able to slow down the games and get them involved a lot.
Dude, that was and honestly, there was one breakdown. There was one bad play that they had.
The Hooper one.
The whole game. The Hooper, 88.
He also stole that DB's soul.
Yeah,
when
he made it
stiff-armed
individual
him into
play
the turf.
Too. Yeah.
That should have been a penalty.
For disrespecting a good player?
So disrespectful. Like, that was unnecessary.
All right. Jumping over to Houston after just one half, Deshaun Watson could be the starting quarterback. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport reports the team expects him to start Thursday night against the Bengals. We did see immediate dividends. There was an undeniable spark in the Houston offense, but statistically, Watson wasn't much better than Savage. So is he a viable streamer, and what does this do for Nuke Hopkins? Matt Harmon.
Well, again, I said I watched this game pretty closely, and there were two players in week one that everybody said, you know, wow, you can just see their absence on the field, that being Andrew Luck, obviously, and Odell Beckham, the effects that their absence had on their respective offenses. But Dwayne Brown not being out there for the Texans.
He's about to get paid.
Holy hell, that made a difference. Yeah, because, I mean, Tom Savage, I still don't know if we know if he's good or not, but we can certainly say he is not the type of quarterback that is ideal for this era of football, especially if you don't have a good offensive line. I mean, he's a statue back there. The Jags are just teeing off on him. But it sounds like, I think they'll go to Deshaun Watson, who, you know, I mentioned the lack of protection. Right away when he got on the field, his mobility and just being able to move around gave the team a spark, but it didn't last either because they didn't really sustain much offense, and he, I believe, turned the ball over. And so, you know, I don't really know. I think Nuke Hopkins, he got a ton of targets, a ton of air yards, opportunity. But this is – I just don't think – like, we can say that he absolutely had a quarterback upgrade despite the fact that they are Brock-free right now. And the Texans offense is another one that just really doesn't have a lot of counterpunches right now.
No. One thing that might have hurt Watson, too, is he came in when they were already down big. So all of those Jags pass rushers were able to pin their ears back and sit in coverage. So maybe if he's in there for the whole game and they can establish the run, Dwayne Brown's back, might be a little better. But it's shaky for now. And in heartbreaking news, Danny Woodhead pulled up in the first quarter, hurting his hamstring. Team fears he could be out a while. Don't forget he was dogged by a hamstring in the preseason. I believe this would put Javorius Allen, Buck Allen, a former Trojan, on the waiver wire radar. He actually outsnapped Terrence West when he came in. They had about similar production, though. But, Frances, what's your take on this backfield now?
Yeah, Javorius Allen actually had 21 touches. West had 19 carries for 80 yards. So West scored a touchdown. I think it was just a situation where the Ravens were in a blowout. So they gave Allen some work when Woodhead came out. I mean, the Bengals put up 0 points. It was a shutout. So they gave Allen some work, maybe preparing him for next week because he might have a higher volume with Woodhead out. Definitely a guy I'm targeting on the waiver wire. If West struggles or, you know, is inefficient, he's been known to be inefficient throughout his career, maybe they get West Allen more involved. Maybe they get Allen more involved in the passing game too. So
I might bump Allen up to my second guy, especially if Woodhead's going to be out for a while behind Tariq Cohen on the waiver wire this week, just because he profiles as a better pass catcher than West. Yep. And the Ravens have been, what, the second most targeted of their backs in the last couple of years, or the most?
Yeah, but no team has thrown the ball more than the Ravens over the past 2 years.
Right, that's what it is. And they target the hell out of their backs. Kyle Juszczyk, Terrence West. Like,
oh, my God. I mean,
everybody.
It's crazy to think that when you think of players who get hurt and you look and you see their stat line, Danny Woodhead was almost decent with playing like four
a
plays.
Quarter. He had four touches for like 34 yards in like 4 minutes of action.
Like 7 points. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, did he come back? Did I miss it?
It was such a great start because you're like, yes, this is what we drafted him for. This is what we were hoping for. And then he got injured. So hopefully good news on Danny Woodhead's hamstring, but we'll find out more later. As for the Patriots backfield, James White, 13 touches. Mike Gillisley, 15 touches and 3 touchdowns. Rex Burkhead was in the mix with some high value opportunities in the red zone and deep passes. So WTF do we do with this backfield? Anybody? Bueller?
I mean, look, I know that everybody's like, well, we can't predict this backfield. Wham. But, like, look, this offense, they did not score points much in week one, but I think they'll get right back to it in week two. They play the Saints next week in the Superdome. That has shootout written all over it, of course.
Wait a minute. Who are we talking about?
The Patriots.
You said they didn't? They scored a ton of points.
I mean, yeah, but they were not like the offensive machine that you would have thought. The Chiefs definitely gave them trouble.
They scored like 30 points.
I know, but look, just watching that offense, it wasn't like the well-oiled machine that you thought.
Yardage-wise, Brady completed fewer than 50% of his passes.
They scored a lot of points on the ground individually, but the passing game didn't look very good. Brady threw no touchdowns. He had to go deep a lot more.
Because they kept tackling their receivers.
I get it.
They got near the goal line.
That's fair, but maybe I was just expecting too much, but I was expecting even a little more from that.
It was so easy on the first drive.
Right. I think that's what set it up, is that it looked so flawless on the first drive, but then things kind of slowed down. The Chiefs definitely took control of that game. So my point is this offense is going to score a lot of points, and you want to be invested in that backfield. And I know it's going to be a headache to predict, but at the same time, I would still want to be rostering guys like James White, Rex Burkhead, who I know let us down in week one, but he was still one of the first backs out there. He got some high-priority targets. I want shares of the New England backfield, and, you know, I get it. It's not going to be predictable, but if you have to throw a desperation running back two out there, I'd much rather it be somebody from this offense than, you know, some goofball like that is just going to get a lot of touches.
Or a flex in their games that should be high-scoring like this one with the Saints. Like you said, Rex Burkhead had a couple of deep targets, one in the end zone. If one of those plays goes his way, he turns into a solid flex performance, and we're not as upset about what he did.
Would literally not shock me.
We needed that touchdown so bad.
Rex in the flex.
It was so awful, man. Like, just watching Burkhead just get out there in the first couple of plays, I'm like, it's happening. I had to play him in so many leagues, and then by the end of the game, I'm like, right, this is why you like can't tilt like your calls live in a football game. It's like, this is a really fun game to watch, and I don't want to care much that Burkhead's not out there.
Right, I wanted a Vince McMahon strut walk all over everybody. You know what though? There's been so many so much sloppiness though offensively from like a lot of teams. It's like they should have like a preseason where these teams play. And they could work out those kind of kinks.
Wow, that's
so that when you get into week one,
hot take,
it's not as bad as it looked.
You've got Rodgers' email, you know. You should.
I should
hit him up.
Like, if they had some sort of preseason.
But it's funny. There was a lot of sloppy football definitely in week one. But there's also some damn good defensive football too.
Don't do that.
No. It's a
don't
mix.
Go Harris.
Because I was just gonna bring up Elliot. I know he tweeted that last night. And
hey, listen, like. Maybe it's just good defense.
But and I would say it's this week particularly, it was like a mix of both because there were some sloppy football. But then in games, like I said, with Jacksonville, their defense was incredible. Carolina's defense had me sweating yesterday.
Oakland's defense, actually, I rewatched that game last night. Did pretty Not darn bad. Well against Tennessee. No. Khalil Mack was wrecking that game. But
he's known to do that.
Yes, in quiet ways. All right, so, guys, I don't know. Did you hear? Alex Smith is throwing the ball deep in week one? Call your friends.
QB,
spread the word.
QB1, Alex Smith, to you,
QB1.
Buddy.
Oh. So QB1. We knew he was able to do this. We've seen it pop up sparingly throughout his career. But if there is a new, more aggressive Alex Smith this season in this offense that they finally perhaps molded to perfection, does this change how we view him as a fantasy quarterback?
A little bit. I mean, like with Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt, they made him look like Norm Van Brocklin. He's out there. Chuck, read a book. I'm so tired of you.
You just made up that
name. You know what, Rank? We were supposed to have the all-youth podcast this morning, and then your schedule had to break so you could come back on the show and ruin
well,
it.
Well,
so.
For Christ's sake, listen. I wasn't alive for Norm Van Brocklin.
I know who that is.
He played in the 50s.
I'm aware of the name. Name to forget.
All I will say is I think Smith is certainly needs to be more on the radar, and he's got a good matchup coming up this week. He goes back home against the Eagles, who just lost Ronald Darby. So
don't be
afraid to stream Alex Smith this week. And speaking of streaming quarterbacks, Jared Goff, franchise, you wrote him up as a streaming option this week. 21 of 29, 306 yards, one touchdown, zero turnovers. The Sean McVay effect is real in Los Angeles, baby.
Oh,
do
man.
We believe in the long-term success of this offense?
Well... Look, it was they were playing the Colts, okay? I don't think we can take anything too seriously.
You can.
Jared Goff, what?
You should take it seriously.
Jared Goff looked like a completely different quarterback than what we saw last year. He didn't win a single game last year. He was completely awful. He set like horrible records of just badness last year. He seemed to be on the same page with Sammy Watkins. He's got Cooper Kupp in his back pocket. Todd Gurley was involved as a receiver. He was slinging deep balls with accuracy. He was firing lasers. He had, I think he was one of only four or five quarterbacks to throw for over 300 yards. He was a top 10 fantasy quarterback. But it was all against the Colts, and we all know their defense is less than mediocre.
We're
going to
stream him again in week two?
We are.
Yes.
But for as much as he gets knocked for things that are sometimes out of his control when they talk about his body language or he's got blonde hair or whatever it is, then whatever thing people want to knock him for, I give him a lot of credit for this game because I was talking to MJD earlier today, and he probably said it best. He's like, if he goes out against the Colts and does not look good,
yeah,
that's a huge problem. But when you go out and you beat the terrible teams or the teams that are struggling, I don't want to say the Colts are better than me. They're a quality.
That is debatable.
They're all professional and they're better than me.
No,
but I'm very good. So
I think the point you're gonna make was that if you go out and you beat the teams you're supposed to beat,
that's what we
resoundingly
want.
Like yeah. that's a great sign.
Not just beat them. Put the throat on. I mean, put the foot on the throat.
Them. That's what I want, and that's what we want from streamable quarterbacks. Is like when you see them have a matchup, you want them to take advantage of it. We don't because
he absolutely
did. We're doing this before the Monday night games, and I swear to great Caesar's ghost himself,
please Sam Bradford, please.
He's gonna have such an awful game.
Please,
he's gonna have such an awful game, and I want you to remember Jared Goff that he went out in a matchup that he was supposed to do well. And did well, and Sam Bradford, I'm already calling it.
You
Sam
realize
did not.
We wrote about Sam Bradford in four separate articles last week. We doomed him for week one. I apologize to everybody that took our advice.
Yeah, that sucks.
And I was joking around on Friday, and I either was on the show or on Facebook or whatever, and I said, you know what, everybody's so hyper on Sam Bradford that I should just – I'm going to put Goff in. I'm taking Bradford out of every lineup and putting in Goff. And some dude on Twitter's like, oh, that's a great way to do it. Like, where are you now, fool? Nowhere.
One little note on the Sean McVay effect on this Rams offense. Last year, Jared Goff was – I mean, obviously, we all know he was not very good. But, you know, he was one of the top five quarterbacks in throwing into tight windows last year per Next Gen Stats. Mm. Over 20% of his attempts – 23.4% of his attempts went into tight windows, which is defined as the receiver has a yard or less of separation. Yesterday, he was the second lowest in percentage of attempts, 10.3%. So I think that is definitely what Sean McVay wants. I mean, Kirk Cousins was one of the lowest percentage of players last year, and it was just a much better fit for
definitely,
quarterback.
Definitely better at scheming guys open, which you could see a lot with Cooper Kupp getting open in the middle. And
perfect
Sammy
player
Watkins.
For it. That's exactly what they needed.
I think Cooper Kupp's, and we'll get to it right now because I was going to jump to the waiver wire. Cooper Kupp, I didn't write him up because I wrote the article early, but it leaves him for you for deep dive. But he's a good guy to add off the waiver wire, especially in PPR formats. He does look like the real deal in that offense. But Waiver Wire. You can read my full breakdown, NFL.com/waiverwire. We'll also have franchises streaming options up later today and deep dive from Harmon. We'll have them all tabbed out. Literally, like, will be an exhaustive coverage of who you need to add for week two. Top of the list, we already talked about them, Tarik Cohen, Buck Allen, Kerwin Williams, big names with running back opportunity coming their way. Chris Carson will be a guy that should be in the mix. He led the Seahawks backfield in snaps, which is something that could change once Thomas Rawls comes back. But Eddie Lacy played, what, seven snaps franchise?
Seven snaps. I think he had five attempts for 3 yards. But to his credit, the Seattle offensive line was just
No, like, there was zero room to run for any of those guys. I obviously watched that Seahawks-Packers game the most closely. Yeah. And, like, the Packers have a decent front seven, but they absolutely dominated.
They looked
the
like world beaters yesterday.
Like, I was telling you guys yesterday, the minute those Seattle running backs got the ball, there were two or three green jerseys in the backfield already. Like, nobody had a prayer except for that one hole that Chris Carson got. Wide receiver-wise, the fantasy hype train captain, Kenny Golladay, is certainly worth a pickup. The one word of caution I have about this.
Worth a pickup.
We can finally
enjoy
everything. Really?
I just want to say for the listeners out there, everything that Adam Rank's about to say is not true.
All right, here, let me say my one caveat. It was a great performance from Golladay. He had 7 targets, 2 touchdowns, 69 yards. However, nice. We were wondering what happened to Marvin Jones because he only saw two targets. Patrick Peterson happened to Marvin Jones. He covered him on 37 plays, allowing just 2 targets, 1 reception, 6 yards, and the touchdown. So we have to be a little bit cautious here. Don't go crazy getting Golladay, because if Marv Jones is being shadowed by one of the best cornerbacks in the league, he could seriously eat into those targets that Golladay got.
By the way, they were bragging almost before the game that Peterson was going to be on Golden Tate, and then he was on Marvin Jones Jr. First of all, I want that. I want him to be fined for that. Like, fool, I'm starting people because of that. Like, I don't put out that.
Fine.
That
even put out a graphic. Peterson.
He put out a graphic. And I'm like, what is this? Like, come on. Like,
I imagine those, that graphic was his team of representatives and stuff make those for him, just put the quote-unquote number one wide receiver. But Tate plays so much in the slot, and Peterson doesn't go there.
Which is because of Golladay.
Yeah, they did 11 personnel, right, with the three wides, and then they had Tate in the middle, and that's why he feasted.
I just knew that I wanted to be excited about him in the preseason, and Harmon would not allow
it. Oh, see, this is unreal.
No, you can't do it.
Unreal. Not accurate. I would never be the person to say preseason, bro. How dare you?
It was preseason.
On the day of the death of my own son, and this is what you're going to do to me.
Vanilla defense.
All right, 2 more guys to get to on the waiver
wire. Hold on.
You're not done yet? What else?
No, because listen, I talked earlier in the show that Mike Clay besmirched me by saying I would rather have Golladay over Cohen.
Yes.
Is it crazy to think, and this is the legitimate debate I want to have, if I'm looking for a wide receiver today on the waiver wire, and this is my hot take and whatever, write it down. You can come get me in week 14.
I'm already sweating a little bit. I'm so excited.
I would rather have Cooper Kupp over Golladay.
I don't care who knows. Agree, because Cooper Kupp's going to play more.
Okay, if I can present the counterpoint, I do think that Golladay has a higher weekly ceiling than Cooper Kupp probably does. If he continues to build momentum in an offense that I think is still going to be better than the Rams, is going to be more pass heavy. I mean, he was right up there with players like DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, Terrell Pryor, Amari Cooper, Dez Bryant in percentage of his team air yards at 37.7. So if he's going to still be out there catching passes in tight windows like that, I mean, this is a player that, I like Marvin Jones enough, but I think this could be the X receiver that they have needed since Calvin Johnson has been gone. So.
But my counter to your counterpoint
is
that they put Patrick Peterson on Marvin Jones. And really, and this started last year where Marvin Jones had a great first couple of weeks, and then the teams were looking at film and they're like, oh, yeah, Marvin Jones is their best receiver. Let's shut him down, and we'll just let Golden Tate work under the middle or work over the middle or whatever.
Yeah.
And we're just going to take Marvin Jones out. And it really worked. Like, it really took him out of it. Matthew Stafford did not have a great statistical season because of it, at least week to week, I know, from fantasy purposes. At what point do they say, you know what, let's take out Golladay?
It's a good question, and we will get a good test of that next week on Monday Night Football. They play the Giants, who have Janoris Jenkins, who is a pretty good shutdown quarterback.
That'll be a great litmus test for this group. And just to wrap it up, a couple of the other guys on the waiver wire to consider, Nelson Aguilar actually had a great game, and he's playing primarily in the slot, looks to be one of Wentz's favorite targets, but –
bro,
he's getting deep downfield, too.
Bro, come on.
What?
Let it out.
USC wide receivers.
There it is. You're not allowed. We as a fantasy community at NFL, we're not allowed to promote. By the way, I didn't have Nelson Aguilar on this list because I have him on so many teams that
already.
I
yeah, you were kind of pounding the table for him at the end of the season.
Oh my god,
got a lot of hype and delivered. And
he is an off-season drumbeat.
I think when they shipped Jordan Matthews out, signal.
Harmon and I were both in. On that one.
I've been trying to die on the Nelson Aguilar is good a hill for like 3 years now.
For a long time.
You know that gif of like the guy just climbing out of the grave. That is me right now.
And tight ends, Austin Hooper. Yes, he only had 2 catches, and one was that massive play. But
cool.
He played a ton of snaps in this offense and is going to be a good touchdown upside guy every week. Which, as we saw at tight end this weekend, that's really all you need for them to be a top 10 tight end.
Oh, but the guy we were talking about at the end of last week, Chuck Clay.
That's who else I was going to mention.
Okay, sorry.
That's who else I was going to mention because he led the team in targets. He's the only player that Tyrod Taylor has any consistency with, and he's going to be a constant threat in the red zone. They get Carolina next week, who should be better against tight ends now that Luke Kuechly is healthy, but they did give up 5 catches for just 27 yards to George Kittle.
George Kittle, by the way, on the field for 94% of the 49ers plays.
That's a legit player, though.
Yeah.
I honestly because that would keep me from listing Chuck Clay as one of the sleepers this week, but Kittle, somebody going forward, like he's gonna be matched.
Dynasty leagues, yeah, definitely grab him.
Man,
streaming worthy. All right, let's get to target and touch leaders. Why don't we start with franchise? Take us through some of your biggest takeaways. A couple takeaways from the backfield distribution leaders. Again, you guys can read this entire article, and I advise you to at NFL.com/touches/targets. And in the middle, just touches targets.
Look, we talked about Leonard Fournette. He got a huge workload. That's probably going to continue going forward. Todd Gurley in a blowout had 24 touches. Little concerned about his efficiency. I think he averaged under three yards per carry, which he should have had more considering the volume and the matchup. He did get the touchdown. I think he was still a top 10 fantasy running back, but yards per carry, Twitter might come out to get him. Let's see what else we got here. I mean, LeGarrette Blount had a receiving touchdown. He was vastly outsnapped by Darren Sproles, but if Darren Sproles isn't getting looks in the red zone, like, he's barely worth owning outside of full point PPR leagues.
Ty Montgomery.
Ty Montgomery played on 89% of Packers snaps. He is a true feature back there. He caught all four of his targets. Obviously, he's a converted wideout. He's got good hands. Dude, this guy
gutted out a good performance against a great defense.
Yeah, man. Against the Seahawks, who just got Sheldon Richardson on their D-line. Like, they have one of the best defenses in the league, and Ty Montgomery was cooking. And Jamal Williams only got 2 carries, I think, for 9 yards, but he's a waiver wire guy until we see Ty Montgomery start to stall out, because this is his backfield. A couple other takeaways. Lev Bell did not do well against the Browns.
Punishment for the holdout?
I saw a narrative like, they're punishing Le'Veon Bell. No. A team is not going to go out.
They just want to lose. We're going to lose week one and teach him a lesson.
But what I think it might be is maybe he's got a little rust to knock off. He didn't get any snaps in the preseason. I think with another full week of practice with his team, with his full offense back there, he's gonna bounce back in no time. Those are major takeaways for me.
May I say something about Le'Veon Bell?
Yes, you may.
I just noticed this on Twitter. I was going to look. This is the thing. Like, you tweeted out that thing one day. I think it was a couple weeks ago. Where you're like, Twitter's like the room you go into.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm going into the kitchen to get a Diet Pepsi, and then the next thing you know, you got a plate full of nachos. You're like, what happened?
Yeah.
What did I
come in here for?
I was coming to look up something, and then I noticed this kid. This Eagles fan from Brazil, and like, he's like, hey, somebody offered me Nuke Hopkins and Marshawn Lynch, which is fine for Le'Veon Bell. And I'm like, I cannot delete that enough. Like, nope. Don't let the Jackals come in for Le'Veon Bell. And as good as Nuke looked and Marshawn was trucking fools, and that was great, it's like, Le'Veon Bell could possibly, and if David Johnson misses any time, there's a great chance that Le'Veon Bell ends up as the number one fantasy running back. Do not trade him. Although, if you want to be the aggressor and you want to prey on the people who are a little disappointed
about
how bad he was, be that person.
I just have two more things I want to say.
Yeah.
That's okay. I said I was done, but I noticed a couple other takeaways.
All right, let's hit them quick.
Cleveland Browns backfield, Isaiah Crowell got a ton of volume but didn't do much with it efficiency-wise. Kind of concerning. The other big takeaway here, Duke Johnson didn't have a single snap out of the backfield.
That's crazy.
He's a full-blown slot receiver.
That was nuts.
Duke Johnson. And then Cincinnati's backfield was just a disaster against the Ravens. It was a blowout. Joe Mixon, I think, had 8 carries for 9 yards.
Rainbow vomit dot gif.
And Gio Bernard led that backfield in rushing yards, which I don't think anyone saw
it's,
coming.
It's an absolute mess for right now. Yeah. Harmon, take us through some of the big takeaways in target distribution and what we learned from that today or on Sunday.
So Amari Cooper was kind of one of the bigger stories for me. He had 42.58% of the Raiders' intended air yards.
Oh, almost 2 decimal points.
Yeah, oh, man, right. I don't know why they display it that way on this little dashboard. It's weird. But anyways, he almost doubled Michael Crabtree in that sense. He also drew 4 red zone targets, which is what we're all whining about with Amari Cooper. There was one series, I think it was the second time they were down in scoring position, where he and Carr whiffed on all 3 of those attempts.
Yeah,
one of which, that was rough. One of which was definitely tipped at the line, which
was
an issue. The first one was kind of high and outside and hard thrown at him, so I'm not too bummed that he missed that.
If Carr puts that one on the numbers, Cooper
walks right in. Like, I know people, Drops Twitter was out there about it.
They were ready for that.
But the second one, though, I do think that was just a failed contested catch attempt, and that's something that I've noted with Amari Cooper in reception perception is he's consistently been under the league average in contested catch rate. But still, 13 targets, that was really encouraging to see that they might really be intent on making him the funnel wide receiver of this offense, which would be great news for his fantasy stock. Doubling back to the Cleveland Browns, Corey Coleman led the team in targets. He was another one, got like a slant route there at the goal line, scored a touchdown.
Great catch on that TD.
Great catch because he got blasted. He led the team in percentage in air yard share, 21.9%. And DeShone Kizer, by the way, he was 14 for 15 on passes that traveled less than 10 yards in the air, 120 passer rating. 6 for 15 on 10-plus air yard passes, obviously 38.2 passer rating. Much less effective, but I know a lot of the fantasy community was really wanting to chase Kenny Britt as a volume play in this offense. But in the preseason, Corey Coleman was DeShone Kizer's guy, and that kind of continued into week one.
Britt had a brutal drop on Sunday, too. That would have converted like a 2nd and 19. That's not going to help his connection with Kizer.
He did some Kenny Britt-like things. So, I mean, I don't know how available Corey Coleman is in many leagues. I know his draft stock really slipped after offseason injuries, but he might be a great lottery ticket.
Late round steal.
I mentioned John Brown was out there a lot, 25.9% of the air yards in Arizona, so he looks like he's dialed in. And the Tennessee wide receiver core, Corey Davis was 3rd on the team in percentage of team air yards, but he did lead the team in targets, had 69 receiving yards, very nice. He also led the pass catchers in average separation on his targets, 3.4 yards. That was much more than everybody else. So the question to me, and I'd actually wonder what you guys think about this. Davis is too good of a talent to me to remain the 3rd wide receiver in the pecking order. I know he's coming off preseason injury, but eventually he's going to get there. I mean, he looked fantastic on his catches on Sunday. So does he usurp the familiarity of Rishard Matthews? Because that chemistry was still there. Or does he take snaps from the higher pedigreed Eric Decker, who did see 3 red zone targets on Sunday, as he is wont to do?
I'm more concerned about Decker, having rewatched that game. They tried to get him in the mix, but it just wasn't there. And like you said, that chemistry, Mariota trusts Rishard Matthews.
Right.
He made some tough catches on Sunday. And I also think that Matthews will also be a good deep threat. He's still younger. He's still got some speed. He proved he could do that last year. So I would be more concerned about Decker. We'll just have to see how it shakes out, because you're absolutely right. In that limited work Corey Davis had, he looked incredible, and I loved how they used him up and down the field.
And he can be effective in the red zone, too, once that becomes part of his game. And I think for right now, I know Eric Decker's game is it's red zone, and that's really what they kind of bring him in for. But you already have Delanie Walker. You have a strong running game. It's like, do we really need to force this guy in? So that would make me believe that he ends up being the guy who gets the short end of the stick. And perhaps, I don't know. I know it's different because real football doesn't operate like baseball or anything else like that. But it's like, I wish like the Bears, and I know that saying this is a Bears fan, you're going to be like, oh, this guy's from Naperville. Well, guess what? I'm from Schaumburg, so you're all wrong. But I'll say this. I wish the Bears would just call up Tennessee and be like, you obviously don't need Eric Decker. Can we just take him? Like, we need somebody.
That would be great.
Like, that would be a perfect – like, that's a perfect, like, a baseball type of thing. Like, there's a player. Yep, we need him. Okay, bring him in.
And the Titans have Taywan Taylor, another rookie that they drafted who was awesome this preseason. I think he was a really good prospect. But so actionable advice from the targets and touches thing. I would sniff around the Corey Davis and Corey Coleman pair of Corey's there. Those, the owners there, see if maybe
it's a good call.
They do not know what they have on their hands. Maybe do some buy low offers because, I mean, this is what week one is all about. Like, what did we see that is the new reality? What did we see that is, you know, not like, is it just a mirage? I think those two guys could be legit up-and-comers.
I'd read the whole thing at NFL.com/touches targets. Excuse me. I think we also have it at NFL.com/targets. But now we turn over to the new segment, Chris's Chargers Corner. Chris.
Yes.
What insight do you have for us tonight in the Chargers for opening season game against the Denver Broncos?
Yeah, well, I think this Chargers offense in general is going to be fantasy gold throughout the year, but when you talk about tonight specifically, I talked to Rex Ryan on our Chargers podcast last week, and he said we're going to see
nice
the true
name
sick name
yeah,
drop.
That was pretty sick.
Segments off
right
out the gate.
Even I'm
proud of
guys
right
are professional.
Out the gate. No, but honestly, he said we haven't seen the true Anthony Lynn running game yet, and I think we're going to see that tonight. They're going to want to run the football. I think Denver was 28th against the run last year. So if you can run on the Broncos tonight, another matchup I like is Hunter Henry. I think Hunter Henry and Antonio Gates are going to be the key to tonight's game because you got that no-fly zone secondary locking up those receivers. I still think you start Keenan Allen regardless. But I think Hunter Henry could have a really big game. He had 6 catches, 83 yards, and a touch against the Broncos in that Thursday night game last year.
So
I think Melvin Gordon, Hunter Henry, the two guys I got eyes on tonight.
I'm with you.
Awesome.
I really like Gordon. That the Broncos defense is an incredible unit, but last year you're absolutely right. They were susceptible to the run. And Derek Wolfe right now, one of their best interior defensive linemen,
Toplin,
is dealing with an ankle injury. Said he was only about 75-80% healthy just last week. So fire up Melvin Gordon. Don't worry about it. All right, that was Chris's Chargers Corner. I like that.
Nice.
We're to bring that back every week.
Thanks, boys.
It's a cute little corner.
Hopefully you can keep
it's
up
cozy
the, name,
back
the name drops, though, with starting out with Rex Ryan.
Yeah, you really set the bar
that's,
high.
That's a big fish.
Came it hot.
All right, I'm going to run.
Melvin Gordon had 200 and over 200 rushing yards in 2 games.
He had good games against them last year.
He's not doing that again.
Probably not. I'm going to breeze through the top performers and biggest disappointments. If there's anybody that you three have a huge take on this, pause me and we'll stop. But otherwise, we'll just get through this four.
I have takes on everything.
So everybody knows what's up. We'll get to Daily Daps. Top quarterback performer, Stafford, as we mentioned, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick, 292 yards. And, of course, Alex Smith with that epic Thursday night performance. Wide receiver-wise.
I don't want to stop you right after. But I've been highly critical of Matthew Stafford in the past because I had him last year and his week to week, awful. Like it crushes you. You look at the end of the season, you're like, hey, stop doing quarterback. But week to week, it was tough to live with. I mean, for his sake, and I really enjoy watching Matthew Stafford play, even that he's a Lion. But I really hope that this is a trend that comes.
The continuity
except for twice a year.
The continuity of him, his receivers, head coach, and coordinator now.
It was really awesome. You're
starting
like,
2.5 seasons. So. Speaking of which, Kenny Galladay, top scorer. Antonio Brown doing Antonio Brown things. 11 catches, 182 yards. Aguilar and Kupp.
On 11
also
targets.
On 11 targets. He was good. Running back-wise, Kareem Hunt, Mike Gillisley, obviously Leonard Fournette we mentioned, and Tariq Cohen, 66 yards on the ground, 47 receiving and a touch.
John Fox fever dream, baby.
Yeah,
this is
two-headed running back attack. Tight end-wise, Austin Hooper led tight ends with his 128 yards and a touchdown. Jesse James, of all people, caught 2 touchdowns
Heath.
For the Steelers.
Heath!
Oh, you didn't know? That's
Charles
what I'll call Clay. Somebody!
And Zach Ertz, as we all expected, didn't get in the end zone, but 8 receptions on 8 targets for 93 yards was a phenomenal start in PPR if you played that format.
That'll do.
Biggest disappointments. Oh, dear God, Andy Dalton. 170 yards, no touchdowns, 4 picks and a fumble.
The jokes.
In James, I don't know if you guys saw me tweet this late last night. In James Coe's 6-4 scoring that we have in the NFL Fantasy Live League that we're all a part of, Dalton got me negative 11 points.
Oh, my.
He would have got you negative 5.
You know what?
I had him in another league. He got me negative 3.
If you started Andrew Luck, you would have been better off.
Thanks, pal. Russell Wilson, also a disappointment. Just 158 yards through the air, was constantly under duress. Managed 40 rushing yards to help save the day a little bit, but not great. Running back-wise, Lacy, 5 carries, 3 yards. Puke.
Done.
Lev Bell, 10 carries, 32 yards. 3 receptions, 15 yards. Where are all those touches? Joe Mixon.
Punishment.
Joe Mixon, as you mentioned, 8 carries for 9 yards, 3 for 15. That backfield is sad. Wide receiver-wise, Martavis Bryant, 6 targets, 2 catches, 14 yards.
Bro.
What happened to the alien?
He didn't. He has some rust in
the Yeah, he,
knock
he had
off.
Some rust in to
they
knock
tried,
off.
I think they
yeah.
tried getting him some screens. And
He was out there for the majority of their plays. So I think in games where they need to open it up a little more, I'm fine with Bryant.
It's Kelvin Benjamin in a game, in a matchup we all thought expected him to smash in. 5 targets, 1 catch, 25 yards. Raising your finger. What's the takeaway here?
Let me jump in on this one. My bold prediction this week was that Kelvin Benjamin was going to be a top 8 fantasy receiver. Not quite. Just a little bit outside on that one. But you mentioned smashing, and I think the biggest culprit here is the fact that the Panthers really controlled this game against the 49ers. Like I mentioned, watch this one really closely because I got to say, guys.
Yes.
I think I might be I might let the Panthers back into my heart.
So excited
I
for you.
Obviously Christian McCaffrey is the
Christ to McCaffrey?
Yeah. Oh my god. McCaffrey is the biggest catalyst of it, but this defense is so much fun. And I think just the fact that they really controlled this game was a big issue. Their one big play in the pass game was a play to kind of a sneaky guy, Russell Shepard, who wasn't out there very only 32% of the plays, but I mean he's a guy that I know a lot of the reporters down there in Carolina are really high on. But Kelvin Benjamin still garnered 34.9% of the team's intended air yards. That was a top 10 mark from week one. So I think the opportunity is there. And not to mention, like, it's so crazy that the Panthers controlled this game and Cam Newton probably looked like, I would say, shaky at best in the first half, especially. I think once this passing game really moves along, they'll be going up. God, I'm really excited about this Panthers offense. I mean, they ran the hell out of the ball.
They did well.
Oh, it was so much fun.
I loved that play where they used McCaffrey as a decoy and threw the ball to Jay Stu instead.
Yes.
That was such an awesome play.
They ran the ball 40-plus times this game, and I think, I mean, obviously, ideal game script against the 49ers, but this could be the type of formula we're looking at from them, which is really a lot to
We
handle.
Didn't touch on it, but Jay Stu and McCaffrey both going to be weekly plays, I think, because they're going to get a ton of work and both be in the mix near the goal line.
And again, this is what I would expect out of Cohen and Howard for anybody who's concerned. Like,
it's a fair comparison.
It's
there.
Obviously Cohen is not the dynamic player, doesn't have the pedigree of Christian McCaffrey, but he's good.
He's a poor man's version of it. The only thing I would say there,
because he's just smaller.
Yeah, he's smaller,
he's
and he's
still electric, but he can't
wiggle.
He's not going to be like the. I think McCaffrey could, once Stewart is gone, could be a feature back. I don't
100%.
Know if I see that from Cohen.
You know, and that's a completely fair assessment. I'm just saying that the way that the NFL is now, and I know it's not how it was 5 years ago and even a decade ago, you just find good players and find ways to get them on the field and try to get the most out of them.
Yeah.
When you're the Bears and you have Jordan Howard, you have
good players.
Cohen, you're like, that's it. I like
no
Kendall
wide
Wright,
receivers now.
And I like Bill Bellamy.
The only difference here that I would
I don't even know, man.
Josh probably. All right, we're fading.
Because he dropped that ball. Like, he's the one at the end of the game who should have caught that ball. Like,
Jordan Howard should have caught that ball.
First of all,
of them should have caught a ball.
He got lit up, number one. Yeah. Number two, he was not in the end zone. It would have been short, and they would have lost valuable time.
Break a tackle.
They might not break a tackle. Because Glennon threw the ball behind him. Like, lead him a little bit. Whatever.
The only difference, I would say, between these two offenses is that I think Carolina is going to be a legitimate playoff contender this year, which means they will be able to be on the game scripts that they can feed both of these backs.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
And the Bears, I do not.
I
think the Bears are going to.
Oh,
they're going
to. Sorry, did the Bears.
They're going to be.
Oh, I swear to God.
They're going to be the type of team that can.
So close.
That can play close games, and, like, they won't be just giving up a ton of fantasy points on defense. They'll play good defense, but they're not going to be. They're not going to be better than 6-10. I feel completely confident in saying that. And therefore, they will get bumped off game scripts that are going to feed a player like Jordan Howard, which is why I think it's fair to be nervous about him while still being excited about Tariq Cohen, whereas in Carolina, I think you can consider both these guys weekly plays because I think the Panthers are going to have, like, the best rushing offense in the league.
Right. They're playing the Falcons, the defending NFC champions, and they did not get
suffering a Super Bowl hangover.
They almost beat them.
That's no.
I know a thing or two about hangovers, and that was a Super Bowl hangover.
That doesn't exist.
All right.
When it
tight
fits
end
my narrative.
Cut them off.
Tight end disappointments. Big names in this list. Jimmy Graham, 3 catches, 8 yards. WTF Seahawks. He should have dominated the Packers.
Well,
Greg Olsen.
If you don't tackle him when he's going up for a touchdown reception.
Hey, it was fair play. Okay, we don't need to get into that. They let those boys play because there was another one where the DB dove into Davante Adams and they didn't call it.
Yes, you're okay, but that's a reasonable. Yes, you're being reasonable and rational. There were Packer fans who were like, "That wasn't catchable." I'm like, "You can say like you can literally."
It was catchable. I think the refs just let him play because the guy.
No, and that's fine.
The DB did turn around, and then Graham also like just threw the DB's head into the ground. I mean, so I was like, I think the ref was just like, "Whatever, we'll let him play."
Fine. I'm fine with all of that. Like you can. It's but I just. I don't like when you're like, that ball wasn't catchable. Like, just say, like, they're letting him play. Like, fine, you're right. No complaint.
Yeah, no, it was
we got away with one. It's cool. Like, and I told this kid on Twitter, he's like, oh, you can't tell by the angle and the trajectory. And I go, I have a mathematics degree from Cal State Fullerton. And he goes, what does math have to do with it? I'm like, you just said angle and trajectory. Like, you just what brought is, math.
No, no, that's
discussion.
Not math. That's science, bro.
I'm going to punch you in the face.
All right. Greg Olsen, 2 catches, 18 yards. Eric Ebron, breakout train, starts out slowly, but the Cardinals always shut down tight ends. Just 2 catches, 9 yards for him. Jordan Reed, 5 receptions, 36 yards. Yuck. That Washington offense, at least that passing attack, a little worrisome right now.
5 receptions was still, like, the fourth most, tied for fourth most among tight ends. It was just a bad, bad tight end week.
Get yourself a tight end who can score touchdowns. That's all you need. All right, and as always, we'll round out your show with Daily Daps.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the Daily
Daps and Hugs. Give me daps, because I'll be scribbling right.
Give me dabbing up, daps abound, daps. Daps.
Franchise, start us off. What you got for a dap?
First of all, let us... In memoriam, 9/11 anniversary, never forget.
Absolutely.
The people who lost their lives, the families affected, the first responders, everyone all over the country today remembering that. On a more positive note, I watched the first episode of this series called The Defiant Ones on HBO with Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre. Mm-hmm. That first episode blew my mind, dude.
Yeah, I got to pick it up. I'm like 2 or 3 into it.
That Iovine took this song that Bruce Springsteen didn't want to put on Born to Run and ended up being Patti Smith's biggest hit.
Yeah.
Like, what? And Iovine's like a 23-year-old on the engineering the album and producing Patti Smith's album on the DL. Like, I had no idea any of this happened.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Such a cool story.
It's really cool.
So watch the fine one.
I'm digging that show. It's on HBO. I got to get back into it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Harmon, Daily Daps, what do you got?
Good question.
All right, we'll go to producer Chris. You got a daily dap back there?
Everybody in South Florida, keep it simple.
Yes.
There you go.
Stay safe, guys.
Glad that the hurricane came in a little less serious than they were projecting, but still, everybody be smart, stay safe.
There's like 4 million people without power.
I know, it's
something
crazy.
Insane.
It is crazy. Harmon, do you have one now? All right, I'll go.
Just dap yourself.
I was gonna say daily daps to all the people that watched Franchise and I on the Twitter Blitz show on Sunday
just
morning.
Just daily daps to the Twitter show. I thought you guys did a good
job. Yeah, I thought it was really fun. Watch it every Sunday morning. NFL.twitter.com. What?
Did they give you enough time on that?
We were there for the whole thing except the A block.
30 minutes. We missed one block.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was
thanks for watching.
I got a time. Oh, I'm sorry. I was hosting my own show at that time.
Cool name drop.
Yeah, thanks for cannibalizing our audience.
Thanks for cannibalizing mine.
You're welcome.
Like my numbers were probably down because of that.
Did you? Look
and
them?
I do the Wednesday. I do that show on Wednesday, and they give me like 30 seconds. They're like, hey, come in and be like, name one sleeper. Okay, gone.
It's like super
fast.
Yeah, it was super fast. Yeah. It was a lot of fun though. So
it's a cool show. I enjoyed. Yeah, I like Colleen or Colleen. I do like Colleen.
We like.
Obviously, I like Aaron Coscarelli and Mark Istook.
Great. I will daily dap the It remake. I went and saw it on Friday. Fantastic. The kids are great. It's a really good retelling of the story. If you're familiar with it, it jumps back and forth between the kids and adults, and they're doing this movie in two parts. The first one just focuses on the kids. The second movie, hopefully it comes out soon, will focus on the adults, but it was fantastic. It was super enjoyable, and I recommend everybody go see it.
Never going to see it too scared.
Yeah, me neither. Never like those movies.
I do want to see it.
All right, Adam Rank, close us out.
I'm gonna piggyback on something that Franchise was talking about with the 9/11, because 2 weeks ago I was in New York for Good Morning Football, and I did take a little bit of time. I wanted to go down and see the memorial, went to O'Hara's, which you recommended, which I would highly recommend you go and do. And going to the memorial, it's obviously very well done. It's very tasteful, which is the most important thing. It's similar to like the Arizona Memorial at Pearl Harbor, where it's like it's a great memorial and it's a great tone and it's not cheesy, which is the one thing that you really
feel.
Incredibly well done. And one of the things I wanted to do, and they have the names of all the victims, and I would just just was like, I just want to kind of see if I can find Ace Bailey and Mark Bavis, two former LA Kings employees who were on a flight coming back to Los Angeles when they were, you know, where they lost their lives.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I come walking around and I'm like, and you can kind of see where the plane victims are. So you're like, okay, so I'm kind of cheating. So I'll be able to find them easily. And there's an American flag sticking out of somebody's name. And it was Ace Bailey. Like, I don't know why it was there. And it was part of it. I was kind of like, well, he's Canadian, but it's because I'm like, oh, I kind of want to go find a Canadian flag and stick in there. But it was cool that somebody, for whatever reason, and I asked somebody, I go, why? It's not his birthday. It's not any significant memorial for him. But he just said, you know what? Some people just, they purchase these things and they see somebody's name and they're just compelled. So that somebody saw Ace Bailey's name and wanted to put it on there was really cool. So yeah. I'm going to end on that.
I would just say, like, if you've never been, the memorial is a well worth the trip. It's, as you said, it's really well done, but it's also just, it's striking to see the loss symbolized just in the fact that the skyscraper isn't there. You walk through New York and just skyscraper, 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 and then you walk into that negative space where the Twin Towers used to stand, and there's a memorial, and it's just, it literally takes your breath away. And then,
and now they have the Freedom Tower next to it, so you can kind of get the scope of how tall these buildings were.
Yes. And you're like, two of them.
Yes, and you're looking, and you're just kind of
it's incredible. And then O'Hara's, the pub you mentioned, is a pub next door. The first time I went to the memorial was when we were there for the draft, and my dad's a firefighter, so I was just like, I need a drink afterwards. I went to O'Hara's, and it's a pub that was destroyed when the towers came down, and then they rebuilt it, and they have a phenomenal photo book that they're willing to share, and they have servicemen and women from all walks come in, and when they come, they bring a patch, and they'll take the patch off their uniform and put it on the wall. So there's
really cool.
My dad went with my mom to New York last Christmas, and I told him about it, so they went there, and he put up his patch from being a firefighter on the wall too. So really cool, but yeah, make the trip to the memorial if you've never been. And with that, I guess we'll wrap it up. Thanks for listening, everybody. James Cole will be back on Thursday for Matt Harmon, Matt Franchise, Matt Appear at Fantasy, and Adam Rank the Maverick. I'm Alex Gelhar. We'll catch you on Thursday.